News.
Hey, everyone.
This is Life Tips with Geico.
Life Tip 1. Use a shower squeegee to remove pet fur from carpet.
Squeegee is also very fun to say. Consider it when naming a pet or child.
Life Tip 2. Switch to Geico and you could save hundreds on your car insurance.
With over 75 years of experience and a 97% customer satisfaction rating, they know what they're doing.
Geico. Get savings into your life. Visit geico.com today.
In his town hall meeting, Donald Trump says the U.S. needs to take the fight to terrorism.
We're not taking it to them, and we have to take it to them. You know, I didn't want to go into Iraq. I said now I was a civilian, so I would say not too many people cared what I wanted to do, but that was a terrible mistake. Our terrible mistake number two was getting out the way we got out.
He also talked about the danger of allowing in immigrants from other countries.
What we're doing by allowing thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of people in here that we just don't know anything about, it's going to happen again because there's something wrong. And until we figure it out, we have to stop it.
Arizona Cardinals head coach Bruce Arians is out of a San Diego hospital after an overnight stay. He held his daily press conference and discussed what happened.
I just had a bunch of stomach pain and doubled over, which is what that does to you. I thought it was a kidney stone at first, but I've been diagnosed with diverticuli in my last colonoscopy, so good thing I've always do those every 2 years.
The coach says he got sick intentionally.
Part of it, yeah, I do it on purpose. I was mad I missed the practice because it was a good one, and obviously we got a lot of good work done.
Team USA's women's basketball team takes on France in the semifinals today. Tip off at 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific, the U.S. after its sixth straight gold medal. This is USA Radio News. I'm Rod Williams Stoll.
Hey, Pat, did you know between the two of us we know how to screw in a light bulb?
Come on, Steve. We can do better than that. Well, at least I can. Tell you what, you sit there and look pretty, and I'll fix it.
Listen to you, big guy. Better yet, let's get everyone to listen to Home
Extraordinaire with Taskman Home Improvements every Friday at 11 a.m. Or you can go to our archives and get access to over 50 podcasts. We cover the basement to the attic and everything in between.
You can even call us at 908-237-0410 during our radio program about our home improvement projects. Remember, Home Sweet Home every Friday at 11 on Huntington Chamber Radio.
From the basement to the attic, you're listening to Stephen Patrick. Home sweet home.
Good morning. At 11:02, it is 73 cloudy, humid degrees in Flemington. Forecast for today is isolated showers and thunderstorms, mostly after 2 p.m., and partly sunny with a high near 88. Tonight, there's a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms before 9 p.m., with a low around 67. Friday is going to be mostly sunny with a high near 88. And then Saturday and Sunday, there is a chance of showers and thunderstorms, mainly afternoon. Partly sunny each day with a high of 86.
Is free to walk. That makes me tend to leave my sleeping bag rolled up and stashed behind your couch. And it's knowing I'm not shackled by forgotten words and bonds and the ink stains that are dried upon some line. That keeps you in the back roads by the rivers of my memory.
Good morning and welcome to the Library Show, starring Jennifer Wimberry and Jim Thatch, broadcasting live over the internet from the Huntington County Chamber offices, and we're 2 seconds into the show and Jennifer's already giving me hand signals. It's going to be a new record.
You always tell me when the music is too loud. The music's drowning you out.
I don't believe it.
Okay.
I don't believe it, Jennifer.
Fine.
The Library Show, starring Jennifer Wimberry. The very fickle Jennifer Wimberry and Jim Thatch.
Fickle in particular.
Okay.
Particular.
Broadcasting live over the internet from the Hunterdon County Chamber offices, yada, yada, no, in downtown Flemington, New Jersey. Tune in every Thursday morning at 11 a.m. and get to know the Hunterdon County Library. The library offers a wide array. Where's the fire, Jennifer? Why am I hurrying saying these words?
I don't know.
The library offers a wide array of services, programs, and community support to the residents of Hunterdon County. On today's show, Anne Hood, whose novel, The Book That Matters Most, just released on August 9th, will join us to talk about her novel, The Power of Reading, and the enduring appeal of book clubs. ACL hosted their final outdoor concert of the summer last night, featuring the British Invasion years. We'll paint a picture for you. Jennifer says the easiest job in the world has to be coroner. Surgery on dead people. What's the worst thing that could happen? If everything went wrong, maybe you'd get a pulse. Discounts with your library card, fall concerts, ACL's annual amateur photography show, and much more. On today's library show. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning, Jim.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
So, Anne Hood's joining us today.
She is, by phone.
So, tell us a little bit about her. What time is she coming on, first of all?
I'm going to be calling her by 11:15, right after the 11:15 break.
Okay.
Excuse me.
I like that name, Anne Hood. It sounds like, I don't know what it sounds like. It sounds like some great literary character or something.
Well, she's a great literary writer.
Somebody call Anne Hood. We need an answer to this problem.
That's what you're saying? Okay.
What would Anne Hood think about all of this?
You're not going to be doing this for the rest of my life, are you?
Anne Hood just won the 50-meter butterfly. No, I guess it's not a sports thing.
No. All right. Well, that's...
I'm trying to fit it into where...
You're trying to fit it
okay.
in?
Okay.
She's a recipient of two Pushcart Prizes, a Best American Spiritual Writing Award, a Best American Food Writing Award, a Best American Travel Writing Award, and the Paul Bowles Prize for Short Fiction.
Great. Well, I'm looking forward
to your
interview.
I'm very excited. Aaron Lovett from Norton, one of the marketing managers at Norton, sent me an email last week, would you like to interview Anne Hood? And I said, oh, yay. And she said, how about next week?
It'll come to me where her name fits into the pantheon of...
All right. You do that.
Pop culture. But let's talk about last night's concert, Jennifer.
Yes.
The British Invasion years. Join us for our final concert. And again, this year we were lucky with the weather, all three concerts. Two years in a row.
Jennifer finally... I got it.
Got the black cloud. She's been able to conquer the weather. So the British Invasion years. I'm going to guess the biggest crowd we ever had at any of our outdoor concerts.
I think so.
Big crowd came out. Beautiful evening. We also had Nina's Waffles and Ice Cream, and in theme of the show, it was a British lorry that he served the ice cream out of. That was a cute little truck. It actually had the steering wheel on the right side and everything. I didn't know that was legal in the United States.
Maybe because it's a special vehicle.
But that was delicious. My daughter got one, and actually it was two people could have shared one of those Belgian waffles and ice cream.
And, of course, my husband went up to him and talked to him before the show, and he said, oh, have you ever been to Ben Spoon Ice Cream?
Oh, really? Was that your husband's favorite?
No, he's been reading a lot about it.
Oh, okay.
And it's in Princeton, but they actually serve it at... Factory Fuel on Stengel Road.
But we digress.
So, no, I just thought it was funny that, like, here's this ice cream truck, and he's asking about somebody else's ice cream.
So we thank them for coming. We thank Linda Sobdesky for arranging them to come. I think hopefully that's the start of having concessions at some of these programs.
And thanks to Georgia, the president of the Friends of the Hunterdon County Library, who sat under...
She was on hand, handing out water and talking about the Friends... To anyone who she could tackle.
To Amy Jo, who was posting videos and pictures to the library's Facebook page throughout the evening.
And to Robert, Lee, John, and Jeff, the British Invasion years. It's the fifth or sixth year that they've come to the library to perform. Wildly popular. I mean, it's just a special band. I love these guys. They just always put on a great show. And he said the story, how I got to know them again last night, it was... Great adventure, and I don't know if he's got the years right, but he's probably close. when my nephews and Kara were little, we went to Great Adventure once, and I would let them run around the park. And just walking down a path, and there's this band show by the lake, and no one watching this band playing. So I said, I'll just sit here and watch for a little while. And this, I mean, I was the only one smart enough to actually stop what I was there to sit down and listen. And, I mean, they played like there was 10,000 people they were playing for, even there. And I'm just impressed with their, I mean, Lee is such a great guitarist. And
he's really, how do you say it? Like, Robert Murdoch's stands are very serious and very...
Robert Murdoch likes to, like, portray, like, a dangerous kind of look,
I think. Yeah, and Lee is, like, the cornball of the end.
Yeah, so, but all great musicians. They all take turns singing songs.
And they'll actually, they will be at Flemington the Stengel stage in December, they announced, too.
Yes.
So if you miss them.
They're a very busy band, so go to their web page, British Invasion Years, if you want to see where else they're playing locally, because I highly recommend them. I hope they had played, during the sound check, they played Pleasant Valley Sunday. I think that might be the song they play the best.
And they played a Beach Boys song for the first time.
Yes. Well, last year they played I Get Around.
Oh, did they?
They mix them in now.
Okay.
And they started playing the Four Seasons, which I think might have been Kara's suggestion, because Kara likes them too. And we were saying, why don't you play a Four Seasons song as an American response? And their reaction, I think this was 2 years ago, they said it was, how can you, we can't sing like Frankie Valli. But he did a pretty good job. Yeah.
I'm going to let you talk for a couple minutes, and I'm going to call Ann.
You're going to let me talk for a couple minutes?
I'm going to ask you, could you talk for a few minutes?
So we have a commercial break?
A few more minutes.
Okay. So
you talk for a couple more minutes, and I'm going to dial the phone.
Okay. We have a program, at least one program coming up this week. It's today at the North County Branch Library. August 18th, starting at 7 p.m., it's a program about the ancient Olympics with art historian Michael Norris, Ph.D. So before the modern Olympic Games, like the games going on right now in Rio, you'll learn about their ancient predecessors through the art of ancient Greeks in a PowerPoint presentation with art historian Michael Norris, Ph.D. Michael Norris spent 20 years at the Cloisters Museum and Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York and has lectured on trips all over the world. He will explore how this religious event in southern Greece developed over the course of 1,100 years and see how it helped draw the Greek city-states together. So once again, that's tonight, Thursday, August 18th at 7 p.m. at the North County Branch Library. And then you can watch the Rio Olympics. Come home and watch the events going on there tonight. I don't know if you've tuned in or not, but I think the most incredible performance so far has to be Lydecki's win by 11-plus seconds. I forget the distance of that race, 400 meters, I think. But 11-plus seconds, it harkens back to probably some of the greatest performances in the history of the sports. I am reminded of Secretariat's 31-length win in the Belmont Stakes, where the rest of the horses finished well behind. So just to see Katie Ledecky waiting in the pool for 11 full seconds while the rest of her competitors caught up to her. Are we ready, Jennifer?
We're ready. I'm going to do a couple commercials. And then
okay, we will be right back with Ann Hood right after this.
Let Stowaway Self-Storage be your local moving and storage solution. With three great locations in Hunterdon County, Stowaway is conveniently located in Flemington, White House, and Lebanon. Stowaway Self-Storage offers sizes from 5x5 to 50x50, discounted packing supplies, and U-Haul rentals on site. Affordable monthly rentals for your personal and business use, let Stowaway help you park your car in the garage again or store those old records that you need to keep. Visit us at stowawayselfstorage.com. Mention this ad to receive 50% off your first month's rent.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntonChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunterdon Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunterdon Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntonChamberRadio.com app today.
Chris screaming in my...
Hey, welcome back to the library show. And we have Ann Hood on the phone. Do we?
Hi,
Ann. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you so much for taking the time out. We introduced you a little bit at the top of the show. You're the editor of Knitting Yarns, writers on knitting, and Pearl, a sequel, Pearling Yarns.
Yeah, right.
The Obituary Writer, The Knitting Circle, The Red Thread, Comfort, An Italian Wife. But your latest book, The Book That Matters Most, was published on August 9th by Norton.
Yeah.
And it's a book about, it celebrates book clubs and the power of reading, and secrets kept, secrets revealed, and the life-changing power of the written word converge to form an unforgettable story. So do you want to tell us a little bit about it?
Well, you know, I've had the idea for this book for a very long time. But I had written The Knitting Circle, which celebrated my love of knitting and women's friendship. And, you know, as a writer, you're always trying to do something a little bit different. And knitting and reading are pretty solitary, passive activities. And so I needed to find a way, like with The Knitting Circle, where I invented a magical knitting circle, I needed to find a way to highlight reading and make it interesting. And one night I was coming home from visiting a book club for my novel, The Obituary Writer, and I was just marveling at how close the people in the book club were, how exciting and smart they were, how lively the conversation had been. And it came to me, that's how you can celebrate reading. You can make a character join a book club. And then the idea was born.
Now, in this book club, Ava joins it. She's recently separated from her cheating husband. She has an empty nest. And her librarian friend, Kate, suggests she join this book group.
Yes.
And it's a very eclectic group of people. There's a young man, there's an older man, there's some young women, there's a widower, a former babysitter.
Yeah.
And Kate charges them each with picking a book a month, and it's the book that matters most to them.
Right, right. So this is a book club that chooses a theme every year, and to Ava's great relief, the year before was the classics, because she isn't up for that daunting reading task. But this year is the book that matters most, which is quite a loaded question. And with this, as you said, eclectic group of a woman in her 80s all the way down to a young 20-something, the answers you would think would be quite different and maybe revelatory. But in preparation for writing the book, I spent about 2 or 3 years keeping notes on the answer I got when I asked anyone who came to my house what the book that mattered most to them was. And I pretty quickly realized that the same 22 books came up all the time.
Oh, that's interesting.
The book was To Kill a Mockingbird.
Huh.
Everybody said it. Yeah, I found that so interesting. So I didn't need my notebook, which I had bought to carefully, you know, include all these titles. There were a few outliers, but for the most part, the 9 books I chose and a dozen others were really the ones that came up again and again.
And they mostly seem to be mid-20th century classics.
Well, kind of. You know, there was Jane Austen and Tolstoy come up. There was 100 Years of Solitude, Catcher in the Rye. So I think it's spread about 100 years or more.
And do you have a book that, I do get tired of being asked this question, do you have a book that matters most to you?
Not yet. The book just came out, but I'm glad you didn't ask me this in 6 months. You know, I think, as I said in an essay that I wrote that I think you read, Jennifer, it really depends on when you read a book. I mean, I do marvel at the fact that the right book often falls into our hands just when we need it most. So I would say as a child, when I read Little Women, it really changed my perception of what reading is, what a novel was, how characters develop and grow. And it was a huge impact on me. I read that book over and over again. But then when I was a teenager, I would say that Marjorie Morningstar was a book that mattered most to me. I don't know why that story about a young Jewish woman, upper middle class, living in New York City in the 1950s, seemed to be my story, a kid growing up in the 60s in a small town in Rhode Island from an Italian-American family. But it's not the facts, you know, it's the story beneath the facts. And that story of yearning and dreams of a young girl really spoke to me. And then in college, when I read The Great Gatsby, it completely changed my feelings about literature and art and life, and I became a total fan of literature of the 1920s, and so I had to include The Great Gatsby in the book that matters most. But, you know, the list goes on and on. The book that when I was trying to write my first novel that kind of inspired me and gave me ideas on how to do it was Ann Tyler's Dinner at Home at the Homesick Restaurant. So, you know, it's such a diverse list, and I bet everybody has a list that crazy and different.
Ava has a backstory going on. Well, she's going through this book club.
Yes.
Her daughter has gone to Italy to take an art course, but has essentially skipped town and moved to Paris.
And Ava doesn't know that.
No, and she finds herself sort of in the grips of an older man who plies her with drugs and alcohol, and I don't think these are spoiler alerts. And she needs to leave him, and she finds solace in a bookstore.
Yeah.
And comfort. Were you thinking Shakespeare and Company?
You know, I wasn't really. I suppose the comparison is inevitable because that's the wonderful bookstore in Paris, you know, American bookstore. But I kind of invented the bookstore. It was like with the Knitting Circle. I invented the store and the group, and I did the same here. I invented a store that I thought would be welcoming to expats or travelers, where they would find a little bit of home. And I suppose Shakespeare and Company, I don't think they do the filing system that I like so much in my invented bookstore, which is just categories like books your mother would like, or popular books, but I don't know why, you know, books you should reread. I just, you know, kind of quirky titles or labels that sort of reveal the owner's eccentric personality.
And actually, as a librarian, I had to get past that, but I managed.
I like the Dewey Decimal system. I'm all for it.
The book Ava chooses to share is a book called From Claire to Here.
Right.
And it was published right after the tragic death of her sister and her mother when Ava was a child. And Ava promises she's going to bring the author to the book group. Even though she has no idea where this author is, this seems to have been a one-off this author wrote. What was Ava's motivation for...
So Ava, who is, you know, or was, a very confident woman. She teaches French at a college. She certainly isn't shy about getting up and speaking in front of a group. She does it every day at work. But like so many people who are in long-standing couples, she was more part of a couple than an independent woman. And she is alone for the first time in 25 years. And she finds it unnerving and a little bit scary. And she keeps chiding herself, like, you know you can do this. You know you can get up in front of a group and say your name and why you joined this book club. You know, you talk to students every day. But, you know, she's evolving. She's becoming her own person again after a quarter of a century. And so when they tell her that the book she's chosen is unavailable and out of print, she's so desperate to reconnect with her past and with that book that she blurts that she'll find the author. And although she immediately regrets it, thinking, is the woman even still alive? How do you even find someone who only wrote one book that's now out of print? She both is terrified that she said it, but actually gets excited by the thought of meeting the author, because she wonders if a writer knows how important the books they write are to certain readers who read them at the right time. And so she becomes quite excited about the task she set up for herself.
Are you a plotter? Did you know how the story was going to go linearly, or did you come across some surprises as you wrote?
No, I would say both. Plot is the hardest thing I do. I mean, I feel like that's my weakness, so I work harder at it. I've always been more the writer who thinks up a character and doesn't have a problem developing characters, you know. But I would, without working hard, I would put those characters in situations rather than in real plots. So I work really hard at the plots. But that doesn't mean that I don't surprise myself or discover things along the way. So some of the things that I imagined indeed did happen plot-wise, and some things surprised me and came about later.
What role do you think book groups play now that so many pursuits are solitary. Everybody's got their Kindle, they've got their iPhone. They're very insular.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be on the subway and say, see somebody reading a book and strike up a conversation, although you should be careful who you do that with anyway. But you don't know what people are reading anymore.
Mm-hmm. That's true. You don't see the cover, do you?
No.
They're hidden. You know, the first time I even heard about a book club was when I lived in Brooklyn in the 80s. And back then, Brooklyn wasn't the Brooklyn we know now. Very few people from Manhattan were going there. And so I was a little bit of a Brooklyn pioneer. And my friends from Manhattan did not want to come. They wouldn't take the subway out. You know, maybe sometimes they got car services. So if I didn't go into Manhattan to hang out with my friends, typically I didn't see them. And I really wanted to make friends in my neighborhood, which was Park Slope. And one day I went to the ATM, and hanging up with one of those, you know, handwritten signs with the little tabs on the bottom with the phone numbers written. I don't know if people still do that. And you would tear off a tab to have the number and the name of the person who made the sign. And it was Park Slope Book Club forming. And I thought, well, isn't that interesting? A club where people read books? I mean, that sounded like heaven to me, but I'd never really heard of one and didn't know of anybody who was in one. And I've done a little research because I wrote an essay about book clubs about a month ago, and you know, that is about when they started building in popularity. And I joined this wonderful book club. There were men and women in it. And we were together probably 2 years. You know, we had a Christmas party together. We often ate dinner together. One of the members was an opera singer, and we would go to her performances. I am still in touch with two of the people from that book club after all these years. So it was a really wonderful, delightful experience. And I would say that, for me at least, and I suspect for book club members now as well, you know, it's being part of a community, and a community that shares a passion. I read so many books that I never would have read those 2 years I was in that book club. We had one member who loved French literature, so we read Zola, and we read Victor Hugo. We had one member who loved nonfiction, and so we read, you know, interesting biographies that were popular at the time. We read a lot of short stories. I mean, it just really opened up my reading life. So I think, especially now when, like you said, you can't go up to someone and say, oh, you're reading that book, I loved it, or, you know, what's that book like? It gives you that opportunity to share anyway.
Do you think the people who join them, do you think they join book clubs because they love to read and they want to talk about them, or are they looking for the companionship, or they're a recent widow and they need to be around people?
You know, in my experience, every book club has its own sort of, what's the word, like tone or ambiance. I have visited book clubs where honestly, even though the author's there, they only talk about the book for 10 or 20 minutes, and it's really about socializing, sharing stories about their children, getting advice or help with things like marriage or jobs, child rearing. Then there's other book clubs that I visited where the person who chose the book shows up with Xeroxes of reviews and analyses of the book and hands out copies to everyone, and they're so serious, you know, about literature and the book that they've read. And there's others that are a mix, of course, you know, that enjoy having wine and food together once a month and also talking a little bit about books. So I think you kind of find the book club that suits what you're looking for.
Was there ever a controversial book that your book group read? I ran a book club at the library for a few years.
Yeah.
And we had a couple of huge arguments. And
oh, really?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You know, I can't remember what the book was, but oddly, it was a James Baldwin novel. Maybe it was If Beale Street Could Talk. And there were a couple of book club members who really didn't appreciate it. So I guess it was more of an aesthetic argument.
Okay.
But I certainly, you know, was on the side of what's wrong with these people. You know, I loved reading it. I had read it maybe in college. And so, you know, here it was 10 or 20 years later, and I'm reading it again. But no, we didn't read anything that was controversial topic-wise. I have found that many book clubs I visit, they purposely look for books that will get discussion going and have an exciting discussion. And one of them that a year or two ago when I was on a book tour and visiting a lot of book clubs, was this book called The Light Between Two Oceans,
mm-hmm.
about a woman who a man and woman right after World War One who live on this isolated island. He's the lighthouse keeper, and she has trouble having a pregnancy to childbirth. You know, she's having stillborn babies, and a baby comes washed up on shore in a boat, and she believes they should keep that baby, and he believes they should find its mother. And she raises that child as her own, and there's a lot of moral ambiguity and a lot of moral decisions, and it seems like that was really popular with book clubs who want their book club to examine those things. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. I think there are some that actually look for books that have those hot topics.
I love what you said. The Parade magazine, in the newspapers a couple yes. Sundays ago, about the member of your Brooklyn book club you're still in touch with, and you asked yes. him why we love book clubs so much, and he said they're like a literary brigadoon.
Yeah. Isn't that lovely?
It is, and my co-host, who's silent right now, will tell you Brigadoon's one of my favorite musicals, and he makes fun of me constantly. But I really like that idea that it's a mythical, idyllic place.
Yes.
That you it's sort of a safe place.
Yeah, it's a safe place. And, you know, there, I have visited so many book clubs that say with great pride and love, really, oh, we've been meeting for 30 years or more. And sometimes they started as, like, young families in the same neighborhood. Sometimes they started, their mothers brought in the daughters, and now the mothers are gone, and the daughters have kept the book club going. I mean, there really are these lovely groups that celebrate with each other, weddings and, you know, births of new babies or grandchildren, but also help out when things are bad. And I tried to capture that in the book that matters most. There's, if one of the members dies during the year, one is undergoing chemotherapy, and, you know, they're signing up to take her for treatments. But there's also someone gets married, you know, there's a lot to celebrate as well, and I wanted to capture that camaraderie.
And both Indie Next List inspired yes. recommendations from indie booksellers and library reads.
Yeah, isn't that wonderful?
Picked
I was
your
so
book.
Excited. I was so excited. I mean, the two things that you, as a writer, know reach readers, and it's just so exciting.
It is, and both the annotations that both Sharon Layburn. And I can't read it because it's so small. Jenny Strzok from Arkansas and New York State. The annotations were, I think they were so perfect.
Yes, I know. I was delighted. I was delighted with them.
Yeah, and the library reads even includes the word idyllic, the juxtaposition of the idyllic small town and the harsh reality of the seedier side of Paris.
Uh-huh.
I think they really captured. Because we love reading books before they come out.
Yeah, that's right. You get that special advantage.
You know, we can create this buzz, and I didn't have to read madly last week when Aaron contacted me.
But, you know, Jennifer, it's really, for a writer, it's really wonderful when people, like the ones who chose the book that matters most, when they get what you're trying to do. It just makes you feel so good, like you did your job well and you're reaching the people who you want to reach. It's really exciting.
Now, you've written essays. You've edited a collection of stories, essays. You've written a book of short stories. You've written historical fiction. Do you have a favorite?
A favorite genre?
Yeah.
No, not really. I would say, if you asked me when I was working on the stories, I would say writing stories. If you would have asked me when I was editing the knitting essays, I would say, boy, I love, you know, writing essays. But it's really the project I'm immersed in. I feel like, as a writer, I'm so lucky because I can try so many different forms and try so many different things. It's really, you know, I've been wanting to be a writer since I was a little girl. And not dreaming of fame and fortune, but of just being able every day to sit and think and read and write, that was my dream. And the fact that I can do it and I can write all those different in all those different genres is just so, makes me so happy.
And I guess growing up, you might say the book that influenced you the most was How to Become an Airline Stewardess. At least for
that's true. It changed my life.
Because you were a flight attendant for TWA.
I was. was. But, you know, the first line of that book was, would you like a boyfriend in every city in the world? As a 12-year-old in a little town in Rhode Island, I thought that sounded pretty heavenly.
So you got to travel and collect stories and tales and people.
Well, you know, it's true. I often think when people comment on my ear for dialogue, I often think it was developed by those long flights across the Atlantic Ocean at 35,000 feet, you know. But I think when I was a young woman, I went to work for TWA when I was 21. And I thought, well, in order to be a writer, you need adventures. As I said, I was such a lover of literature of the 1920s. And I think I was also a lover of the lives in Paris and elsewhere of Fitzgerald and Hemingway and Gertrude Stein and that whole lot, you know, who seemed to live such exciting lives. And I thought, I need to have that excitement. I need to run with the bulls and jump naked in fountains in Paris. But as I grew and matured as a writer and as a person, I realized that Eudora Welty said it right when she said all a writer needs to do is sit on her own front porch. You know, writing is really about looking inward.
Do you have a favorite place you return to in the world other than your front porch?
Well, I do love Italy, not just because I'm an Italian-American, but I have fallen in love with a certain area in Tuscany. Who doesn't? And I have spent a lot of time in the past 3 or 4 years in Paris, and that is a city I've always loved. You know, how can you not love Paris? But the past few years, I've gone and been able to stay and not have to run to the tourist attractions. You know, it's beginning to feel a little more natural and comfortable to me, and I'm discovering the side streets and the secret stores and restaurants, and I have really enjoyed going back there every year. So I guess the same places most people love.
What do you read? Do you read for pleasure? Or what do you like to read?
Oh, wow. You know, my secret pleasure is reading literary detective stories. I am completely addicted to a series from a Neapolitan writer named Maurizio Di Giovanni that takes place in Naples in the 1930s before World War II when Mussolini is coming to power. And the detective has this secret power of being able to hear the last words a dead person said before the murder, and it helps him to solve the crime. And there's about 5 or 6 of them, and whenever I'm on an airplane and, you know, don't have to read for work, that's what I'm taking out and reading.
Now that sounds fascinating that he can...
Oh, they're so good. They're so good.
That he can hear... a new detective series just came out in the U.S. where the detective can see where the murderer has been.
What is that series? I'll get it.
I shouldn't have said it because I can't remember it off the top of my head.
Oh, let me know if you think.
I will. No, I will.
Because I do love, and I love a series. You know, whenever Laura Lippman has a new Tess Monahan book, I'm the first one out there to buy it. You know, I just love to follow those detectives.
Yes. And so you're touring right now.
Yes, I am.
Up in the Massachusetts area, but in September, you'll be at the Brooklyn Book Festival.
One of my favorite things to do. I'm always so delighted when I have a new book out and can go there. I'm there on the Sunday, I think at 1:30 on a panel.
Oh, I was going to ask, are you doing a panel or will you just be at the Nortons?
Yeah, no, I'm doing a panel.
Oh, that's exciting. That's exciting.
They're great. I don't know. I just got the details this week, actually, and I haven't written them down yet.
Okay.
It's always exciting, and I've met so many wonderful writers from those panels.
And then you will be at the Barnes & Noble on the Upper East Side Monday the 19th.
Yes, I'm so excited about that. I'm being interviewed by the ever wonderful Billy Goldstein, and anybody who listens to the radio or knows New York writers know that Billy is a wonderful advocate of writers everywhere, and so delightful to talk to, and I can't wait. And I get to have dinner with him after, so I'm doubly excited.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah.
Yes, and then you'll also be in Jersey City on the 20th at Word.
Jersey City. Yes, great excitement because I haven't been there yet. And when I was a little girl, Jersey City was a mystical, magical place to me because we had cousins there. Her name was Jenny and her family. And they would come to visit my grandmother, and it seemed like they had come from some very faraway land called Jersey City. So I'm excited to see it.
It's still along the lines of mystical. So you have a website, annhood.us.
Yes.
And you've got
all of my events are listed on there with the details that I never remember on the fly, but all the times and addresses and if you need a reservation or not is all put on there.
Okay, and you've got a link to your blog.
I have a link to my blog, and there's also a magical button called Contact, and if you want to set up a book club meeting or event with me, or you just want to email me about the book that matters most or any book or essay that I've written, that goes straight to my email.
Okay, great. Are you working on anything yet? Do you have anything you can give us a hint about?
I have three really exciting projects. One is a new novel that I've just started, so you'll be looking for it in a couple of years. It's called The Museum of Tears. And I'm working on a nonfiction book about the books that mattered most to me as a teenager, which will come out next summer with the paperback of The Book That Matters Most. And I am slowly working on a cookbook.
Oh, that's an Italian-American one?
No, you know, it's really my adventures in cooking and in life. They're essays, two of which have won Best American Food Writing Awards, and they're followed by the recipe. But they're really about how food nourishes us physically and nourishes our soul. I love what the great food writer M.F.K. Fisher said, which is she never wrote about food, she wrote about love. And I think that kind of captures what I'm trying to do.
I was going to, one of my questions was, after you wrote The Knitting Circle, then you did the essay of Knitting Yarns. So you answered that you are going to do something kind of a companion book to the book that matters most.
Yes, right.
Okay. So is there anything else we should know about you?
Well, you know everything. You knew about how to become an airline student.
I think that was on your website.
I think it is. With a great old picture of a flight attendant from the 50s.
It is. That was really wonderful. I'm looking really fast, trying to find the name of it. I will email you that book.
Email me that book.
But here it is. I found it.
Oh, you got it.
I got it. It's Collecting the Dead.
Collecting the Dead. I love it.
And it's Spencer Cope, K-O-P-E.
Okay.
And it's my favorite words are the first novel in a series.
I love that. Yeah, right. Is there anything better?
Yes. So he is a fabulous, fabulous character.
Fantastic. Thanks for the tip. And thank you for talking.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And I hope I get to see you in September.
Yes, I'll be looking for you, Jennifer. Thank you.
Okay, thanks so much, Ann.
Bye.
Bye-bye. So I just finished talking with Ann Hood. You have anything to say? You're still in the room.
Very interesting.
Thank you.
Enjoyed it. You did a nice job with that.
Thank you.
My wife's book. What's your most influential book or what?
Mine?
How did you? Yeah.
I don't know. I've been thinking about it and trying to come up with one.
Well, how did you term it? Have a book that
matters most.
A book that matters most. Yes. What book matters most to Jennifer?
I've been.
Give me the short list.
The short list. I've been racking my brain. It's probably Dory's Play by Patricia Coombs, which is a book that my mother read to me over and over and over as a child,
until
I could recite it.
Oh, there you go. Let's hear a little.
Dory was a witch, a little witch. Her hat was always on crooked, and her socks never matched. And wherever Dory went, her black cat Gink went with her on the night of the costume ball, and that's where I forget it. But
that's where it just starts getting good.
I know. But as I was an adult, my father, before ABE Books and Amazon, you used to have to do book searches. And he searched to find me a copy of this book. And it was the first time like somebody had really put a lot of effort into finding a book for me.
Do you have copies of it?
I do. I have his copy, which is actually a British edition, which, as he has recently learned, I love British editions of books. And then I did find an American edition a few years later.
Any other ones? Now that you got a little older? Different stages of your life?
Probably different stages.
Very evasive. Okay.
No, I've been thinking about this for a couple of weeks since I read the book. And then when I found out I was going to do the interview, and I just...
My wife's favorite book, or the book she would say without hesitation, would be Look Homeward, Angel.
Interesting.
By Thomas Wolfe.
Yeah. Any particular reason?
I forget why, but she'd always say that book had a spoke to her or something when she read it, and she rereads it a lot. And
oh, you know what? Now that you're saying that, maybe The Prodigal Summer by Barbara Kingsolver, because I read it the Memorial Day weekend every year, because it smells. You can smell this oncoming summer, and it just.
Oh, yeah.
It reminds me a lot.
What happens in that book briefly?
it's women. It's three or four women growing up. Or I guess they're older. And
looking back on things.
Looking back on things, reevaluating their life. They make jam and jelly. They go for long walks. They bring about a child.
What's the crisis in this book?
There is no particular crisis. It just sort of.
Just making jam and jelly for 400 pages?
Yeah. No, and they forage in their wood. They learn to live in their.
It's the conversations they have with each
it's
other.
It's their learning to live where they live, and learning.
And where do they live? They live separate, and they get together every summer or something.
No, they don't get together every summer. They live near. Some of them are related. Some are sister-in-laws. Some aren't. How about you?
I don't really know. Okay. Nothing really. I like to read biographies, so that's. But nothing can speak to you there. I don't
Why not?
I can't remember fiction. I mean, I like, because they're true stories. But
that doesn't.
I think you guys are talking about fiction.
Not necessarily, because Washington Through the Purple Veil, written by Lindy Boggs, who's Cokie Roberts' mother and Barbara Sigmund's mother, who was the mayor of Princeton for a long time. She lost an eye to cancer, and she took over her husband's Senate seat. Or the biography by Ellen Sirleaf Johnson, the first female president of Liberia. They can speak to you as well, I think. I don't think they have to be. All right, so there you go.
Thank you. Nice job. And thank you, Ann Hood, for joining us, and good luck with her tour, I guess she said she was on.
Yes.
Another quick look at your weather. 88 degrees today under partly cloudy skies. Looks like the weather will be the same on Friday and Saturday. Showers. So looks like Sunday appears to be a washout from the afternoon on, so get your outdoor work done on Friday or Saturday. And then the weather clears up again for, looks like, most of next week. So I just got to get through Sunday. I have Today in History. Do you think we'll plow through that briefly?
You want? Let's go to the commercials real quick, and then we'll plow through Today in History.
Gotcha.
I promise. We'll be right back.
Home Instead Senior Care. It's our passionate dedication to creating personal relationships between our clients and our caregivers. Visit our website at www.homeinstead.com/325.
You've got a friend.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Welcome back to the Library Show. I'm Jennifer Winberry and Jim Thatch. And before we dive into Today in History,
You're both Jennifer Winberry and Jim Thatch? Wow.
You made me forget what
I was going to say. I would like to see that little thing play out.
on Tuesday, the 23rd of August at 1 p.m., the South County Branch Library will be having Reptiles Alive with park naturalist Laura Coons from the Hunterdon County Parks Department. So give them a call, 609-773-0032, to register. But it was a very popular program last year.
Yes.
Okay, knock yourself out. I'm going to skip the music.
Okay. Today in history, today is August 18th. Jenna, remember last week when I said August 11th was the most boring day in the history?
Are you going to tell me August 18th is?
I've changed my mind. I stand corrected. August 18th is the quietest day in the history of the world, I guess. I go global with this thing. So I couldn't really find anything. I only found one event. I mean, I apologize to all those medieval massacres I missed and things like that. But Jennifer, in 1587, Virginia Dare was born. What's significant about that?
She was the first child born in the New World.
First English child.
And a European.
Born in America. At Jamestown Settlement, I guess, or down in Virginia somewhere. But then what happened to her? Did she grow up to be a senator or something?
I don't think so. She either went back to England or died, I think.
Well, she died she at died. Some point, Jennifer.
Well, I mean, eventually died.
She did die. Do you know how?
She wasn't part of Roanoke, was she?
Was she part of Roanoke? Her grandfather came back to get her, and they were all gone.
I've always been fascinated by that, by Roanoke.
So I do not know no one knows what happened to her.
Interesting.
Hopefully she was okay, but we don't know. Okay. People who were born or died in the state, again, a very lackluster group. I apologize to their parents and to them themselves, but I don't know, Jennifer.
They did not inspire.
No inspiring today in history, but this keeps up. We might have to just drop this bit altogether.
It'll get better.
1750, Jennifer, Antonio Salieri was born.
He was Mozart's competitor. He was a court.
Acceptable. Yes, he was a composer whose actual music is actually gaining recognition now, but supposedly, if you watched Amadeus, a fierce competitor of Mozart, and people, they hinted at that they killed Mozart, but...
Yeah, it was kind of like Shakespeare and his the playwrights who didn't really make it.
1774, Meriwether Lewis was born. Great first name, by the way. Do you know anyone else named Meriwether?
No, just last names I've heard. He was Clark's companion exploring the Louisiana Purchase. And
What was their task, Jennifer?
To go west of the Mississippi and explore.
Right. Was it to find the Pacific Ocean?
And there have been a lot of really great books written lately about all the flora they found along the way, all the different plants, the native plants that they recorded.
1928, Marge Schott was born. I don't expect you to get this one. I don't know.
Oh, I do. She was something with baseball.
That's correct.
She was a baseball commissioner? Or she owned it. She owned a baseball team.
She did own a team. I'll give it to you. Nice. She owned the Cincinnati Reds.
And she was a mouthy woman.
Yes, and got in big trouble for racial slurs about her team and things like that. She had a big St. Bernard dog, too. That's all I know about her. Roberto Clemente was born on this date.
He was a baseball player. He played for the Pirates or San Diego Pirates.
And what is he most known for, unfortunately?
Was he killed in a plane crash? No, that was Thurman Munson.
He was killed in a plane crash bringing relief supplies.
He was.
To his native country. Right after he'd gotten 3,000 hits. I believe he has 3,000 exactly. So, tragic. Roberto Clemente, born on this date. Robert Redford was also born on this date in 1936.
He is a movie actor, Barefoot in the Park.
That's the movie you go to, huh, Bear?
I did it on purpose. The Sting.
Very good. Too numerous to mention. 1943, Martin Mull.
Night Court. He was Bull.
That is incorrect.
No.
I don't know who that was.
But Martin Mull. He was a comedian.
I remember the old show Fernwood Tonight. Mm. He was in that, but he's been in a ton of movies. Like playing bit funny parts. Martin Mull, Mr. Mom. Did you ever see that movie?
No. And I'm still, I got the
But Furthermore Tonight, I used to watch that when I was little. Him and Fred, I forget what the other guy's name was. He's been in all those Spinal Tap movies and Mighty Wind movies. But they did a fictional talk show, Fernwood Tonight.
I don't know.
It was hilarious.
Tonight.
Very funny
really?
Show
when
back then. And the band's name, well, it was like modeled after the Tonight Show, but Happy Kind and the Mirthmakers were the band, like instead of Doc Severance. It was a funny show. 1952, Patrick Swayze.
Dirty Dancing, he was an actor. He died tragically of pancreatic cancer.
Name
very
two other movies he was in.
Oh.
Everybody says Dirty Dancing. Name one other movie.
Die Hard? No, he had Die Hard?
Incorrect.
Or a movie, like a trilogy kind of thing?
It may have been. I don't know. Red Dawn? Uh-huh. Did you see that movie ever? Roadhouse?
Okay.
Okay, moving
on. Oh, was he was in Ghost.
Oh, Ghost. Yeah, there you go. Ghost. 1958, Madeline Stowe was born. I only included her because it's my DVD alert of the week.
Clue?
Madeline Stowe.
Clue?
No.
She was in Clue.
Okay, but that's not my DVD alert.
Yeah, that's why I'm asking you. What is your
DVD? So you know who Madeline Stowe
is?
Yeah,
she's
I can't
actress.
Confirm that she's in Clue because I've never seen it. What she
You've
like.
Never seen Clue?
No.
Oh my gosh, it's hysterical.
It is?
You
Except
have
that one
see.
With the Tim, what's his guy from?
Tim Curry, yeah.
Yeah.
1+2+1+2. How many bullets are in the
so
gun?
So what does Madeline Stowe look like?
I think she's Miss Scarlet in the movie. She's tall. Sometimes she's a redhead. Sometimes she's a brunette.
I don't know if we're talking about the same person, but okay. She was in the movie Last of the Mohicans.
Was she really?
Did you see that?
I did see it.
Yeah, she was the dark-haired girl. The main love interest, Jennifer. She was the star.
Really?
So my DVD alert of the day, quickly, because we're almost out of time, is Daniel Day-Lewis in The Last of the Mohicans. And finally, Jennifer...
I must be thinking of somebody else. No, she was not in... It doesn't look like she was in Clue.
Of course not. Died in 2014, Don Pardo. And that'll conclude it.
He's an announcer.
Mm.
But I can't think... I don't know.
Saturday Night Live.
Oh, really?
Which I know you were not a fan of.
No, I can't stay up that late at night. I really thought she was in Clue.
All right, give it up, Jennifer. She wasn't
in
Clue.
No, but now I'm bothering. Who was in Clue?
Somebody that must not have been that good a movie.
It's an older woman than I... Madeline Kahn.
Yes, Madeline Kahn. Mel Brooks is... a lot of Mel Brooks movies she was in. Was Clue a Mel Brooks movie?
No, it was not.
Okay.
No, it was some of my favorite.
But I think it's time to wrap it up, Jennifer.
It is. So thanks again to Aaron Levitt from Norton for reaching out to give me the chance to interview Ann Hood. Ann Hood, thank you for taking the time out to talk with us this morning. Don't forget to get the book that matters most from your library. Remember, wherever you are, you can call, go online, or stop in. Your library is always there for you.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Rod Williams-Dole.
The discussion that we had was very thorough. I will tell you that we were only able to scratch the surface of the complexity of the threats that our country faces.
Retired Lieutenant General Michael Flynn and Governor Chris Christie accompanied Donald Trump to his first intelligence briefing yesterday. Meanwhile, Secretary Hillary Clinton was at John Marshall High School on their one-year anniversary of the $47 million campus.
I am
added is that we're going to have more computer science. We're going to have computer science in every school, like what you're doing. Teachers so that schools have that kind of expertise.
After a number of controversial decisions, several Olympic boxing judges have been sent packing. This is USA Radio News.
We all want to live long, healthy lives, and we know that smoking is not a part of making that happen. We all know the dangers, but we also know that it's tough to quit smoking and make it stick. And that's where Nickel Block comes in. It comes in a little bottle. And when you put it on the filter of your cigarette, it blocks the inhalation of tar and nicotine. So you got to check this out. Go to nicoblock.tv and find out more. You can also call 877-835-6060. Now, whether this is your first time quitting or...